Welcome to episode 110 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week we have Janko Mivsek, the author and creator of AIDAWeb, here to talk about AIDA, Scribo, and the community that surrounds those web application development environments. It turns out that AIDA is behind the squeak.org website, which you may be surprised to know. If you have feedback for this episode, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to the Facebook group, Industry Misinterpretations. You can also join us at the Small Talkers group on Ning. Please head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us. And of course, you can subscribe on iTunes. So this is James Robertson, product evangelist for Syncom Small Talk. I'm here with Michael Lucas Smith, our lead on the Web Velocity project. And I'm also here with Janko Mivsek, who is the core developer for and creator of AIDA, and also Scribo, which we'll get to later. Hi, Janko.
Hello.
And I guess what we'll do is we'll start with AIDA. Why don't you tell us that some of the basic history of the project? It started from the web page I was on. It started in 1996, which is
roughly
the same time period as Visual Wave. So why don't you just start by telling us where it came from?
Yes, in 1996, I started this. This was actually my first serious Smalltalk application, that's for start, because I started in 1995 with Smalltalk. And this was actually for the concrete project, which is it was for one web store of our major Slovenian publisher. So this was the kind of start of AIDA Web at that time. Also, at that time, Visual Wave came around, and actually I started to question a little bit to develop AIDA further, but later decided to continue AIDA.
Well, I mean, you would have been laughing comparing Visual Wave to what you're doing with AIDA, where, oh, it looks good where you're drawing all these web components onto a canvas, but in reality that turned out to be a very bad way to do web development.
Actually, Visual Wave have components also, kind of. But one of the main reasons that we didn't go with Visual Wave at the time is that it was meant for migrating GUI applications to the web. And after a while, there were no signs to become more something more generally useful. That's why we abandoned this idea to go to Visual Wave and continue with AIDA Web, actually. So this GUI-like approach was the reason, because AIDA is architecturally is much different than.
Yeah, well, I mean, just to take it back to Wave for a second, one of the flaws that it had was that as new web technologies came along, since it was trying to do everything in Smalltalk with the GUI builder, you know, I recall one of our first accounts in the late 90s that asked us, well, gee, how do I integrate CSS into this? And, you know, our answer was like, well,
Yeah.
You know, it was really, you know, our basic answer was, well, gee, it didn't seem like it was designed to do that. So AIDA was very different, right?
Yes, exactly, because one main reason for AIDA was to follow the web, web philosophy as close as possible, and also to merge somehow object-oriented philosophy with web-like, web one, because actually there is a quite a lot of similarities between object-oriented approach and web approach, kind of, for instance. And I wanted to merge those things together to leverage object-oriented way of thinking and also Smalltalk on the web.
Okay, now before I get to trying to compare AIDA to something that's even more recent, Seaside, let me step back a bit to the kind of web technologies that came out of the Java and Microsoft world, the ASP and JSP kind of approaches, which, you know, also exists in Smalltalk with the Web Toolkit. How does AIDA differ from that kind of ASP, JSP, SSP kind of approach?
This those are so-called template-based approaches where you put your code inside the HTML directly. And of course, there are quite a lot of problems with that. And at that time, we were 10 years in MVC or something, MVC approach, and in Smalltalk, I think. And we know exactly what kind of spaghetti code is that if you combine together two languages in one for in HTML or something. So,
yeah, exactly.
And also. And those guys, ASP, AJSP guys, also started to consider about, or to think about this a little bit more. So I thought when Web Toolkit came out, I was already, how to say, convinced that this is also way to go. So AIDA actually is component-based framework. So or on the other side, you build your page from the Smalltalk components, not from the HTML code together with some of your code. So in this is that's from the start. So you are programmed the pages, you are not composed from the HTML. That's the main difference from the template-based systems. AIDA also had a kind of template support, so you could add, for instance, AIDA snippets into HTML, and this HTML was then parsed into so that AIDA code was called. But we abandoned this quite easily and quite early. Here we are kind of similar to CSIDERs. They are also did the same.
Yeah, I was going to say that. CSIDE had taken that tack early on and abandoned it as well. So that kind of leads to the next question is, CSIDE seems to have, you know, most of the buzz for web frameworks in Smalltalk right now. So just tell me how AIDA differs from CSIDE and where you think the sweet spot is for AIDA as opposed to where you think, you know, where people think the sweet spot is for CSIDE.
Maybe let me start where we are similar, actually. I think that in component-based approach, we are similar. So we both are programmed the web pages or web applications. Okay, components are a bit different from from AIDA and CSIDE. For instance, we have our main component, to say, is a web page or web application, actually. And while in CSIDE they have component as component, and component can call another component. This is actually called to another web page, kind of. Also, we are building web pages from composing from the web elements, while CSIDE has kind of canvas, painting on the canvas principle, which is kind of similar but also different. Also, we have linear componentization from the small components up to the whole web page. So you can start from the primitive elements like text and image and start to compose from them to very small components up to the highest one. So it's kind of a recursive structure then. Here, CSIDE, I think, has kind of a jump from the primitive elements up to the big components, and in the middle, they are a little bit not so strong. So, this is about components, which are quite similar. What is different is that we are a RESTful framework, RESTful in the meaning that we support resources on the web, and each resource can have a URL and which is unique and so.
Well, that's the resource. That's where it's very different from CSIDE. That's right, because CSIDE tends towards dynamically generated URLs.
Yes, exactly.
But that's because CSIDE really encourages this coding style where you put out HTML elements and you can create callbacks in line at that time. So it definitely encourages that sort of dynamic feel where the state flows more freely. I guess, you know, yeah. I've seen that the component-based approach fits the REST and web paradigm really well, whereas the C-side approach is they call it the heuristic web framework, doesn't. And because you throw away this idea that URLs have meaning, then you can program more, differently.
That's true. That's this part of is completely different here. How we are actually managing control flow through the application and how C-site is doing that.
Yeah.
Because we are.
Yeah. I gotta throw in a checky. As the current political candidates say, it's a fundamental difference between the frameworks.
Yes, I think I also in theoretically we are here complete pretty differently, and I actually did quite some thinking last year about where we are actually different from C-side and AIDA, and I came out that here is the main problem is in this structured versus unstructured way of programming, actually. This is the background of this difference. You know, structured programming, like go-to, no-go-to, considered harmful, go-to is considered harmful, yes. All modern languages are now structured, and so. But on the other side, you have unstructured structures, which are like web. Web is completely unstructured. You don't have kind of structure on the web.
Does that scare you at all? I mean, one of the heritage of Smalltalk is unstructured, and Lisp is unstructured, and IO is unstructured, and Ruby is unstructured, and you know, all of these dynamic languages are unstructured. And I mean, don't get me wrong. If you've got an unstructured system, it's easy to put a structured system on top of it and get great value out of it. But you know, is it really in the spirit? I mean, does that bother you?
Actually, on the web, yes. There is a problem. I think that the structured programming for the web is too restricted, kind of, too limited. But on the other side, structured programming enable us to come to the situation we are now it was good, of course, structured programming, but for the web is the problem, I think.
Well, I mean, one of the things that C-side was really cool about before JavaScript started its second renaissance was the ability to handle the back button, have this dynamic flow control, all that kind of stuff, and then JavaScript with Ajax callbacks, etc., really started to change the face of web development, web 2.0 programming, etc. AIDA Web does that stuff pretty well. It follows the kind of is it actually using Scriptaculous to do its JavaScript or
yes, Prototype and Scriptaculous, yes, and this is
I think those things fit into AIDA Web a little bit better than C-side.
I claim that it is, of course, because Ajax in AIDA is completely integrated inside and it's seamlessly, so you almost don't see that you are actually using Ajax in AIDA applications.
On the flip side of that, one of the things I really admire about C-side is the ability to choose what JavaScript framework you're going to use because it hasn't got one built in.
Okay, that's the JavaScript libraries. This is another story. You know, in AIDA, you can probably also switch to the another one quite simply because you have here two things: Prototype and Scriptaculous. And Prototype is the main library, which is always loaded, while Scriptaculous is loaded on demand. So even that you have Scriptaculous always in the AIDA code, you are loading on demand to the browser when you need first time. So this is a different. This is not the same as on C-side, which they have Scriptaculous package, which has both inside.
Well, Prototype's not compatible with some other frameworks like, you know.
Yes, but we can switch prototype to something else because Ajax call is just one of prototype functionalities, and those Ajax calls can be switched quite simply because we did abstract Smalltalk methods which are calling prototype then. So Smalltalk methods are something, AIDA methods, while prototype JavaScript calls are just completely different, and you can switch this, I think, quite simply. So I don't see the problem here.
So when you're programming in AIDA Web, is it just to give people who haven't seen it before a feel, it follows naming conventions. So like you name your methods on your class in a certain way, and that becomes an entry point. Is that correct?
Yes. For instance, first we have this MVC separation of domain model from the presentation of those objects. And for instance, if you have a domain model with class person, for instance, you will do another class. This is called person app or app. This is, you just add to the name, and so this is the convention how to name the presentation classes. So in person app you have a presentation for the person domain object. This is first things. Then you start to do so-called view methods, and also you name them according to some rules. So you start with view, then main. For instance, view main is also is always present method, which is for the default web page when you open this person for on the web. And then you add another methods, view, for instance, for person, view edit, to edit information, view salaries, for instance, for salaries, to show the salaries and such things. And then you have so-called action methods, which are for, in MVC, you have MVC, so model, view, controller. So we have a person in model, we have person app and views for view, and action methods for controllers. And those action methods are called when you made some action on your view. For instance, you press the button or something. So that way we have this complete separation of on MVC between those three aspects.
Now, along those lines, it turns out that you have a pretty nice website that's running on AIDA, the aidaweb.si, if people want to go to it. And you have both documentation, some screencasts, and you know, you can learn about AIDA, it looks like, without even necessarily having to start working with it. So you can take a look at the screencast and take a look at the doc and see if you think it's the right way to go about building your web app. And then you can grab the download either for Squeak, which is what I think you're pointing to here on your website. And it's a version of this is bundled with the latest release of VisualWorks from SynCom as well. What, I guess I should ask, you have 6.0 beta is being advertised here on your website. What's the release that shipped with VisualWorks 7.6?
This is 5.06. It's the latest stable version. And we are now already 6.0 beta. We have already 6.0 beta already, and we are now preparing for 6.0 release.
So what's
slowly
coming up? What's new?
New will be actually, it is first there will be AIDA Scribo release also, and AIDA Scribo is the content management system built on AIDA. And this, because of this coming out now, we are also switching to 6.0, the version of the AIDA, because this version will be close to the Scribo version, you know, and we are working together now, Scribo and AIDA. So what will be new? I hope that new thing coming. Okay, internationalization support is very strong currently, because we have in our community we have one Japanese, Masashi Umezawa, and he is working for Japanese version of AIDA. He is working a lot on that, on all aspects from URL in Japanese up to down to the text in Japanese, of course. So internationalization. Then also I like to put some more GUI-like web programming features. Maybe we will succeed, maybe no, I will see. So basically I think that there won't be a lot of new things, just a lot of improvements in this 6.0, but AIDA Scrivo will be the main new feature, actually.
I should mention at this point that there are two videos out on the web right now from Smalltalk Solutions that talk about both AIDA and Scrivo, and people can certainly look at those. There's also your talk from ESUG, which I have not gotten online yet, but since we're doing this podcast, I'll probably try to coordinate to get that out fairly quickly.
Thanks.
But there's all of that information. There's also some interesting, actually, I wanted to, before I get to asking about the community, well, actually, you know what, let me just go ahead and ask about the community. You mentioned it just now. The community behind AIDA is not just you. This is not a one-man operation. You have a fairly decent-sized community behind this, and you have a number of public-facing websites that are running out there for people to look at that have been built in AIDA, right?
Yes. Yes, community. I started to community last year, actually. Even that AIDA is open sourced since year 2000. But it was community which actually started AIDA to be known a little bit more broadly. And so far, if we judge from the mailing list, there are 70 people on the mailing list, about 10 of those very active. And we are two core developers now, that is me and Nico, that is Nicolas Peton, and it's his student from France. And he is actually now the main developer behind AIDA Scrivo CMS. I also mention Masashi Umezawa for international issues, also for XML persistence support. And there are many more contributors, for instance, for tutorial translations. We have now tutorial in also in Spanish and French. Then there is a Wikipedia article, logotype, and presenting on conferences, such things. So people are quite contributing, and I think that our community is quite lively, I think, and nice place to be. So I like to invite everyone to join us. Not just for contributing, but also for having a fun, to say.
It sounds great. But which Smalltalk do you generally work in with AIDAWeb?
Oh, that's an interesting story. I'm a visual worker for a long time. Now others are more or less Squickers, so I'm also now jumping from Squick to VisualWorks and back. And also Gemstone is here on the palette, because I'm also Gemstoner. I know Gemstone for quite a while also. So we actually kind of officially support now those three dialects. But we have also a little bit older port to Dolphin Smalltalk.
And it turns out you have some fairly prominent uses of AIDA out there in the community. If you look at, I think you mentioned before we started talking that the squeak.org site is running on AIDA, which I didn't know. I kind of had it as an assumption in my mind that squeak.org would have been a seaside site. But as you said, this is an AIDA site.
This is AIDA, yes. There was many reasons why. Actually, we had kind of competition with Squickers about to produce the exact copy of the this site, old site actually, from design to the old features and so, because the old site was a small wiki based. So, another reason is also that I volunteered for the web team, Squeak web team leader, and was then chosen for that. So, and of course, one of first things was to start uplifting, to say, the technology of the site. But this was kind of a funny situation because I was kind of a web team leader, on the other side, one of the competitors for the same site. So we tried to be quite open and to build this site. So we started with AIDA, of course, and then also Lucas Renkli came with peer based one. But at the end, we actually finished the site. So we were chosen then. And this is now, I think, is one month ago we switched the site.
Ah, so the criteria was finishing.
Yes, delivering, actually, yes.
Were there any other frameworks that vied for the position?
CSite, of course, Peer.
Yep.
And CSite Peer. And, but we delivered, and so we were chosen.
Yeah, this reminds me of why the Stick website is running on top of my blog server. It's primarily because I was willing to say yes.
Yes. It's at the end, this counts, of course. Well, but I think that we will, on the long run, we will also deliver a lot of good out of this technology, because whole AIDA community stands behind me, actually, in that respect. So, and they are also contributing some concrete things. So,
oh, sure. There's nothing like a nice public display of your technology to drive additional usage of it, because if people can see that a well-known site is running on top of your technology, they can see that it might be useful for what they want to do. And as far as scalability goes, I wanted to mention this briefly. You did, probably, I think it was about a year ago, you had published some statistics about scalability, and I don't have the reference handy. Maybe you can send it to me afterwards. But the bottom line was that AIDA scales very nicely, right?
Yes, exactly, because we are scaling very well memory consumption, so also CPU efficiency, I think.
Well, that's very different to CSite, because CSite likes to hold lots of stuff around.
Yes, because of our model of sessions and session state is quite different. But we still don't have timeouts, for instance. AIDA don't have any timeouts.
Wow, really?
For sessions.
No. That's quite surprising. No.
But still, for instance, I did some benchmark, as Jim mentioned, about how many sessions you can open on one image, Visual Works image, and how many memory will go for that. And we came out with such numbers. So I opened 10,000 new sessions, which is kind of 10,000 new users also. And this memory went up to the 300 or something megabytes, which is about 20 kilobytes per session. But after some optimization, this is kind of timeout, but not really timeout. It downgrade to mere 40 bytes per session. So you can imagine how can you scale this.
12 bytes of that is the object header, right?
Sorry?
12 bytes of that is the object header, right?
Bytes per session. So this is not only one session, one session object, but also a user object and some other things. So 40 bytes, 400 bytes. Okay, sorry. And in reality, I have here in one image, for instance, hosting on my server, 50 websites on single image. 10 of those are quite active sites, and this is currently eating about 280 megabytes.
Now, just to give people an idea, you're eating about 280 megabytes for 50 sites. What class machine is that?
This is actually very old. I think that this is two CPU 1.5 gigahertz, 5 years old machine actually.
So one image. So you're not actually even utilizing the other core, just one image.
One image, yes.
So there's a lot of people out there who don't believe it can be done.
Yes, just especially Java one. No.
Oh, yeah. Yes. We had a conversation a while ago with a guy who was a Java developer talking about how they needed all of these various failover and load balancing and yada, yada, yada things in order to have their web application scale. And they absolutely positively said they needed all this. And then I asked them, so how many users do you think you'd have on this system? And he said, well, you know, peak maybe 500. I was like, exactly. I was like, man, that's like one image on a not terribly high class machine for Smalltalk.
Exactly, exactly. And also, I don't have any Apache or something behind or on the front of those images. This image is serving directly to the net.
So you're not doing proxy pass or anything like that.
Nothing.
You're serving straight out of. Now, is that using Swazoo?
Swazoo, yes. And together with static content, like images, everything included. So we don't have any special static server for static contents, but we serve everything from this image, all those 50 websites.
Now, how does that do if you're serving something that's relatively large? I mean, images are one thing, but how about if you were serving, I don't know, MP3 files or videos?
But Swazoo now is actually quite performant. He's able to serve just four times slower than Apache right now, which is very, very good. And this is actually saturating three times the 100 megabits Ethernet network, for instance. So you can imagine that you can serve quite a lot of MP3 and such things included. Of course, we have now this streaming support in Swazoo, so you don't actually copy all complete MP3 into memory and then serve, but you stream directly from the file, you know. So that's also the reason why things are so fast and also able to serve so much.
Right, so if it's only four times slower than Apache, you can scale quite nicely just using the straight Smalltalk image. And then if you do find that you need the scaling, you can then get immediately more scaling by jumping to using Apache to serve that stuff.
Yes, that's the next thing if you really need. But from my experience, I can, for instance, Quick is also serving everything from the by Swazoo now, and Quick is quite perform. I think frequent site. Okay, quite not so much, but still quite some.
Well, in terms of performance, James, that doesn't seem to be the answer anymore. If you want to take that static content and improve the performance of your website, you don't keep it on the same domain. You move it to a different domain so that the web browser can access it from more than two connections at a time. So people move it to Amazon Web Services, yeah.
Right. You would then use some kind of content service, like, you know, a content service like Amazon or what have you.
Amazon, yes.
Yeah, and then it's not your problem at all, sure.
So actually, I think that that way of serving web application is now good for most, or if not all, of web applications we have, except the really big ones. So things like DBLDB or something, this is a big one. But I think most customers won't need such big performance. But of course, you still can then go with load balancing many images if you like. So this is normally possible in AIDA too, of course.
Okay. Well, a couple of things I wanted to get in before we wrap this up. You mentioned that AIDA Web has been under open source since 2000, and specifically, what license is that?
First, I didn't take care about licenses at all, so it was GPL for a long time, but we switched to MIT now for half a year ago, I think. So we are now MIT, and Swazoo will be MIT soon, so you will have completely MIT solution, because AIDA Web is also came always with Svazu integrated. So that's why we are saying itself that we are a web application server, not just web framework. So
it's an all-in-one solution.
Yes. It's one solution, one click to say install, and you start immediately with complete solution. And you don't need to switch to some Apache or whatever quite a long time, if any.
Okay, and then the other thing I wanted to ask before we wrapped up is about the community, and that is, you mentioned that you have a community of people around this. If people wanted to join in as developers, how would they go about that?
They just go to our website on the community page, www.aidaweb.si, and there is a community page and you have all information. So there is a mailing list, of course, and also IRC channel on Freenode. It's called AIDA, and all the time someone is there, so you can ask me or someone else, and we will be glad to help you.
Do you listen to this podcast?
Recording it, listen to podcast. How do you mean? What do you mean exactly?
Like, do you listen to it on a regular basis? Have you listened to it before?
Yes, of course. I'm following, and I think that this is really good that Smalltalkers, we have such broadcast, because we are feeling a little bit more together, you know, with that. And I think this feeling is important.
Wow, that's good to hear. And so would you do this again?
Why not?
Why not? Thanks. Thanks very much for coming on and talking about AIDA Web. It's a pretty cool framework.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for coming on. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you for inviting me.
In this next segment, I have Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. As programmers, we tend to take pride in the programs we write. This is good. It shows that you care about your work. It's hard, then, when someone criticizes your code or suggests other, perhaps better ways to do things, not to take it personally. That's when you need to step back and treat the code as if someone else wrote it. You must ask yourself objectively if the suggestion really leads to a better design. If it does, then keep it and improve on it if you can. Software development is hard. It's not a personal insult if someone else sees a better way of doing things. Try to adopt an egoless programming stance, and you will not only improve the quality of your code, but also enhance your software development skills each time. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
In this segment, we have James Savage with the week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Our contributor in the EU, Brusenel, reports that a large bank in Luxembourg is looking for a freelance Smalltalk developer who also has GUI experience, English language, and Oracle for a 1+ year contract. It is considered a plus if you have previous experience in the financial sector. Our contributor in India, Harin Thacker, reports that in Aminabad, WePro Technologies is looking for a senior software engineer in Smalltalk for embedded domain who is proficient in 4GL, Smalltalk, Syncom Object Studio. Knowledge and incident reporting tool is considered a plus for this permanent position. Pune, India. DynePro has a permanent position for a programmer who has experience with Smalltalk and Unix. Mumbai, India. Tata Consultancy Services has a permanent position for a Smalltalk programmer who has object-oriented programming experience or education. In the USA, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Robert Bosch LLC is looking for a development manager who has experience with OO programming, Visual Age Smalltalk, OOAD, UML, Team Lead, Automotive Experience, and has geographically distributed development experience. Fluency in the German language is considered a plus. Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Tennessee Valley Authority is looking for a programmer analyst who has experience with Visual Basic, Web Objects, C, C++, Java, HTML, Perl, Smalltalk, Oracle, DB2, Windows 95 NT, and Unix. Experience that is considered a plus includes PLSQL and FrontPage. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. As for my job search, the interview that I mentioned last week should take place this week. Good luck with your job hunting.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretation of the podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.